All right, I think I finally got the keyboard shortcuts down here for my recorder, which is excellent. Makes my life so much easier to deal with. This is Jay Nevro. You're listening to Life Autistic. This is episode number 719. Bum ba la bum ba bum ba. I feel like I've been doing too much of that intro. That's what the word was. I was struggling to get this word. Introspection. Autistic people can fall into introspection too easily, too hard. And that's not good. Need to search for good obsessions to latch onto. Because, frankly, it's more profitable for everybody. It's profitable for you as a Zenith. It's profitable for everybody else. You know, it's profitable in the whole point of something they pay you for your obsession. Not to obsess about yourself, that's just silly. Okay? I fall into it. And I need to work back out of that thing. If you've been noticing, it's been a whole lot about and get back to other things, because I have plenty of interesting information I have that I could share with you. And unfortunately, it probably doesn't have the kind of depth that you guys would probably love to have, for the simple reason that, you know, if I don't necessarily remember people's names, I do remember a little bit about their backgrounds as far as it's about what I was going into. This comes up because, and I had thought about it before, I don't know if I'd expressed it on one of the episodes before. No, I think I did, about how important it is that adults have a good time. Adulthood needs to be better than childhood is. We've made a horrible mistake by trying to make childhood so blissful as some kind of counterpoint to how horrible being an adult's going to be. You know, in the old days, freedom, you know, kids had a lot of freedom just for the simple reason that adults had better things to be doing. So kids would kind of, you know, you would shush the kids away, you know, make them go, do something so you could do what you needed to do. We got into the whole Puritan ethic of hard labor and pain and torture were something good, you know. Oh, yeah. Life is supposed to suck. In fact, if life sucks, God is pleased. You know, if you're personally suffering, you know, God thinks you're great. And it's like, no, I don't think so. Certainly not to the point to where we almost throw it at ourselves. I was talking about this because one of my younger, my number four child, Joshua, he's not doing things that my wife would like to see him doing. The only problem is often my wife doesn't, she is really wrapped up in the whole Puritan work ethic, you know. The only joy in life comes from, you know, flailing the skin off of your body through your heavy labor. And it's like, but then when you're going through it, of course, it isn't pleasant. And it's like, when does the joy come? And of course, everybody talks about some future day when you're going to have rest. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, honestly, when they speak about that, it's rest from certain things. I really hope it's from the kind of schizophrenic craziness that we get ourselves with. You know, oh, you know, I'm not a good person unless I'm, you know, making fantastic, huge, marvelous meals. You know, that are wonderful. And you go, yeah, you know, I feel like half the time I'm detoxing my wife from her crappy life, and it's like, you know what? I just wish your life wasn't crappy. You know? Not that she wants it that way, but it's almost like it's her responsibility to have a crappy life. And she wouldn't feel like she was doing a good job unless her life was filled with crappiness. I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. You know, every time I come home, I get the laundry list of things that has to be done that day. And it's like, you know what? I've tried. I have attempted to say, let's get away from society a little bit, from civilization. And I mean civilization as in the way of, you know, civilization as opposed to liberty type of my take on that. I've expressed that, I think, in the last few episodes. You know, can you, if we can get some separation from that and try to find some better ground to stand on, because, you know, it can't help that in our culture it's all about a growing economy. Your economy has to be growing all the time. You have to keep running faster, faster, faster. Thank you! Work harder! You know, and that's kind of the whole thing that kind of comes out. And it is. It's shrill. It's mean-spirited. And if you aren't working at 150% consuming, both producing and consuming as hard as you can, society comes back and starts yelling at you to get busy. You know, you're alternately being lazy, but then not being lazy enough. You know, you're being productive, but the most important thing for the economy isn't to produce. For our economy, it's to consume. Of course, you have to have things to consume, so that needs to happen, but, you know, the economy doesn't look good enough, you know. We have all these numbers that are supposed to measure how things are going well, and of course, they're kind of mutually exclusive. If you're spending all your time on one, you can't have the other. Well, the economy, which is inhumane and nasty, it wants it all. It wants everybody to have more leisure to, number one, work a lot harder. Number two, have a whole lot more leisure time. Number three, to consume like a drunk monkey. You know, now, the more that they make you work so you can't do things for yourself, it does, to a degree, make you have to rely on other people, on other people's production, and you have to consume it. So there's kind of a feedback loop there. But yeah, they're starting to come up with, people need more leisure time because there's a lot of consuming there, too. We need both. And it's like, wait a minute, this is crazy. And so, yeah, when people act schizophrenic, it's not because, you know, what's going on here? I'm stuck behind the stupid guys doing construction, and they're in no hurry. What are you doing? They think they own this access road, and I guess in a smaller sense they kind of do. Okay. Sorry. So, you know, when it comes, I've been talking a little bit about politics, and this has nothing to do with politics because it doesn't matter. Both sides of these things want the same thing. Is it basically a almost how do you describe it? Almost a, well, it actually induces schizophrenia, you know. You have to be about five things that aren't related to anything that you really want particularly, but you've kind of been co-opted into all of them. Anyway, so no, that really wasn't what I wanted the podcast to be about. What I wanted to be about was, well, maybe I need to go ahead and let this one be about this. The next one, and I hope I can remind myself, needs to be about peas, about genetics, the joy of peas. Anyway, so, let's get back. We'll get back to the joy of peas here in a minute, now that I'm totally surrounded by tanker trucks who are doing construction and using this little bit of road here to accomplish their ends. And, of course, this guy thinks he owns the road, so he's not going to give me any kind of berth here. Although I'm going to take it whether he likes it or not. He'll be totally surprised. Where'd that guy come from? I own this road! Okay, there we go. We really do. We need to model more for our children. Model more adultness. And it's got to be an adultness that accomplishes more than just work, 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 work. Drive, 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 drive. You know? That's what it needs. You know, so our lives almost have to change so that we can reconnect with our kids and have our kids look forward to the future. If that's possible. So we have to make a world where being an adult is more interesting than being a child. But that still gets things accomplished. It still, oof, guy. The problem is, after these guys tear up these roads, they don't actually go back and fix them. It really should be a requirement. If you're going to do all kinds of stuff, if you're going to tear up a road and building another one, you know, it kind of behooves you that you need to clean up the roads you tore up. Although these guys tend to feel that this access road, its only purpose, you know, I actually use it for travel. Other people don't use it that way. It's supposed to be used to create these, you know, look at this thing. This place is a freaking factory now that they brought in. We now have this huge factory. Oh my gosh. It always amazes me how we can just slap something up and then we just leave it. Destroyed. You know, well, who cares, you know? That's part of how it works. You know, and that, I guess that's kind of an analogy of what happens. I'm driving by basically a road construction central camp. There's all kinds of trailers out here. There's all kinds, you know, they brought in this rock crushing business and stuff like that. It's actually on the side of this road on, I would have to say, either private or state land that used to be just nice and pretty to look at. Now it's this septic tank sinkhole. And the great part is once they're done with it, hey, they don't care. They just walk away. You know, they take all their equipment with them, but all the wreckage that they've caused just kind of stays. You have this blighted hunk of ground that they say, oh, it's okay, you know, the crap will grow back, which is what they consider the nice stuff to be, is crap. And that's what's left behind after you've come and gone. And it's like, you know, is that a metaphor for the way that we live? We don't care about what we leave behind. It's all about there's a job to be done. By golly, we're going to do it. And we don't care about the stuff we leave behind. That's what war ends up doing. You know, France is still pockmarked with, and there's still parts of France where you don't go because of the devastation that happened 100 years ago. There's still landmines there that are not blown up, and if you start dinking around, you're just going to blow yourself up. So there's whole swaths of the universe that are just nothing. You know, you don't go there. Can't be there. Anyway, you know, and that's kind of what happens now. Our lives have become so purposeless, except to work for some larger purpose, which typically isn't even very good. You know? How do you deal with that? How do you handle that? And my only solution is I can only change things for myself, my wife, and my family. Of course, the tricky part is I have to get my wife to do it. And she's somewhat invested in the way things are. You know, I'm ready to break free. I'm ready to break free, but my wife isn't. You know, and why not? Well, you know, it's really simple. It's not pleasant to say, but it's simple to just to reveal to you, it's fear. Just very readily, right there, that anybody can see, it's fear. Fear of the unknown, of something that you haven't known. And what you need to do to make that happen. There's a beautiful world out there. It's just like, you know, people say, it's a beautiful world out there if you get off the interstate. I live in what's now considered an interstate town, you know. An interstate highway drives through there. Most of our town is all about trying to service people on the interstate or trying to coerce money out of them somehow. It says, and you know what? There's so much beauty off of the interstate, away from this kind of living, that makes so much more just sense. You know, getting a little closer to nature. And I was just thinking about it, just sitting here thinking about it, I said, you know what, I wouldn't mind buying this piece of property because of all the cool things on it, but you know what, even if I could buy it with the money I have, I couldn't afford the taxes on it. The regular payments you have to make to government just for the joy of owning something. You know, there's always a cost to be paid. Government exacts that cost. And it's like, you know what? I wish government would just leave me alone more. Do I want them to go away completely? No, because there's certain functions that they provide that I really don't want to have to. I don't want to have to worry about roving bands of vigilantes or robbers or crooks just feeling like they have free rein. I don't want that. I like there to be some kind of force that kind of makes those people just go away or not feel so free. I'm grateful for that. But I'm not grateful for the fact that, you know, we don't have, you know, the whole thing was life, liberty, and property. I know people say pursuit of happiness, but originally, the idea was that you were going to have property, too. Enough people didn't have property that they didn't stick it in there, you know. There was enough people that just rented and didn't live a lifestyle, although that was very rare back then. You know, the whole point was to get property. People thought that it was such a given that you didn't have to mention it particularly, which is sad. They should have. It is embodied in one of the Bill of Rights amendments that says that, you know, you should feel secure in your, and, you know, it was mostly against search and seizure of your property. Of course, that's now gone. Search and seizure is now almost an afterthought. They can go in, they can do whatever they want to. Your property is not your property. the government can take your property for non-payment of taxes. And the question is, why are taxes tied to your property? Shouldn't your property be the one thing that you feel secure in? No. You know, your responsibility is to pay your taxes. You go, I don't take away government's responsibility to fund itself, fund its activities, but it's gone a little far. It's gone to the point to where it's like, well, I've got to pay this much taxes. That means you have to make this much off the land, and that takes away your freedom to do what you want with your land. And then, all of a sudden, you don't have freedom anymore. You're having to do things in order to appease a government. Your life ends up being a whole string of activities that are done basically to please the government. Or to please society, or to please a combination of them. You know, all that stuff. You know, people say, oh, it's so bad to keep up with the Joneses. You know what? You have to keep up with the Joneses. Because if you don't, you'll be fined, you'll go to jail, or you'll be ostracized. It's that simple, you know. It's really nice to be able to say things, but if you can't do them, then what's the point in saying them? You know, you can say, well, I want to live a simple life, and you go, well, that's impossible. You can't live a simple life. Too many demands, and that's what they are, demands are placed on people. I have to work at a certain level of job just to hold on to what little I have. You know? I can't buy my property, hunker down on it, and you know, be kind of a self-sufficient sort of a person. It's not allowed. There's several mechanisms that prevent that from happening. You know, and most of them tied to the fact that people are so married to the economy. Oh, well, we have to have a certain kind of economy here. Come on. You need to keep contributing, and we're going to force you to. You know, a great way to do it is to tax you. Because that bill comes in, and you have to have money to pay that bill. So you have to go out and get a job. Of course, once you have that job, the government takes a reasonably large percentage of that money, and you have to work more to do that. If you're working more at a job to produce money to pay your taxes so you can hold on to your land, you almost have to pay other people to do what you would normally do if you were just taking care of yourself. That requires more money. There's a tax on that kind of activity, too. And it just snowballs, and you start finding out, I can't really, you know, only the idle rich get to practice a form of simplicity. What we would probably, you know, what I used to read about called voluntary simplicity. Only rich people with lots of stuff to spare can do it for short periods as some kind of an experiment. What our grandparents, great-grandparents, and great-great-grandparents did just because they needed to, or they had to, or they could, we cannot do because our lives are so manipulated by society, culture, and the government. Those two things have spawned. It's so sad. I would love to live a simpler life, but I'm in a position of not being able to. And of course, and before I say anything, and I don't want people to say, boy, he's really talking down, he's really ragging on his wife. He goes, no, I'm not. He said, trust me, she's doing everything she's supposed to be doing. You know, there's this appointment, this appointment, this appointment, this appointment, this appointment, this appointment. And you're going, no, there's not. All those are made up. You don't have to do any of them. Oh, no, but if I don't do that, then this will happen. You know, if I don't have the regular tooth appointments with my dentist, all of my kids are going to have crooked, ugly-looking teeth. And you go, and our society, you know, if there's one thing that our society punishes worse than anything else, I mean, to the point of being, it's not just ostracized, you will have to pay a heavy price if you don't have straight white teeth, relatively straight white teeth. Mine are relatively straight. My parents went through the whole thing of paying out several thousand dollars. Actually, I don't think my parents did. I think my grandmother did. Anyway, paying out all this money to straighten my teeth. Now they're starting to get crooked again. And my parents' teeth are getting crooked too, but thank goodness, you know, after a while we don't fret that stuff so much. But see, that's another thing. You know, we have a societal thing. There's guys that's all they do is straighten teeth. Because it's so important to everything. If you don't have a good smile, you'll never be a success. And boy, let me tell you, isn't being a success the penultimate, not penultimate, the ultimate. Penultimate is one back from the ultimate. Ultimately important thing. By golly, you can be a stupid idiot. There's plenty of them. But if you have straight teeth, you'll do better. You'll be a stupid idiot that's more successful. You know, being smart is almost superficial, or at least looking smart, or having the right degrees is almost a superficial thing, given the fact that, boy, you better have straight teeth. Yeah, you better. Anyway, so, I need to ask my Indian friends about that. I've got some friends that grew up in India, that live there. Now they're here for a little while. Hopefully they'll go back home and, you know, I don't know. Hopefully they come here for education, learn a few things. Hopefully learn not just what we do right, but also what we do wrong and do better. You know, my basic hope is in the developing countries that maybe they will see what we have done and the stupidity that we have fallen into. Not to say that we don't do good things, too, and that we haven't learned, and there's good things to be learned from us. There's plenty of good things to be learned from us. But that they can take the good things and fluff off the garbage. But they don't seem to be doing that. They seem to be just buying into our entire thing. The good, the bad, the ugly, the stinky, the marvelous, all of it together as one big happy group. And it's like, guy, I really do hope that they don't make the same butthead mistakes that we made. I really do. Anyway, so, okay. Enough of that. you know, I struggle because I'm willing to go in this direction, and my wife isn't. You know, is it fear? Yeah, it's fear. But that's okay, you know, and I'm not saying, boy, she's such a little person because she's so scared. She says, what are you talking about? It's a scary world out there. She has, you know, she has a perfect right to be scared, but that stops you from doing the things that need to be done. Okay? And that's the biggest thing. Things don't change until you lose your fear of making those things, of making those changes. I've gotten to the point to where I feel like even if I make horrible, monumental mistakes, I will probably be in probably the same shape I'm in now. The wonderful part is that I think if I make some of these changes, that it will be so much better on the other side. I was trying to convince my wife somehow that she could simplify her life and she could spend her life doing more interesting things and share those interesting things with her children. My wife seems to think that See, I don't know how to say this without being rude. She seems to think that we're on kind of equal footing. And that would only be true if her and I were in competition with each other. You know, how hard can each other person work? How much more can we be called away from, you know, fun or good positive things? I do want to do that because I'm going to run up against a problem. And I need to explore this. I need to explore this. Well, there's a new piece of land here that's opening up. They were selling it for $79,000. I think the price has gone significantly down. They don't even put a price anymore. Starting at, they're not saying. For all I know, you could buy them for $30,000 these days. They're just desperate because they thought they could turn this thing around and sell it almost instantly. And now they're probably looking to cut their losses really hard. Anyway, so I'm going to take the side road and see what happens. That's a paved road. That's a paved road that used to lead somewhere. Where'd that thing lead? Interesting. Anyway, okay. Red Cliffs. Okay, anyway, so, you know, that there's some kind of wonderful balance there, that everybody has to work as hard as everybody else, and you go, no, my job is to make money, you know, and there's nothing I can really do to reduce that except transfer some of it. I'd love to make that more possible, and I guess I probably can. Of course, this guy's selling 140, it should be 160 acre plots. These aren't 140. 140 isn't a surveyor's mark, particularly. Boy, it's all about, this is a private road. No hunting, no nothing. Yada, yada, yada. Private roads. Property owners are so great. It's probably, see, that's the problem. You buy one of these things, it's got all kinds of restrictions on it. What you can do, how it can be, you can only do this here. You can put up a trailer, but you can't stay in it permanently. You know, it's only for until you build a house, and your house has to be of a certain size and make that makes it very expensive. And it's like, oh, great. Anyway, so. Uh-oh. Well, there it is, man. That thing used to be open. Now they've got a gate across it. I think the guy decided that he wasn't gonna do so much. It was a nice idea, but now he's taking his ranch back. Interesting. Let's see what happens down this other road that I saw. We'll see what happens there before I just get back to whatever work I was up to. Okay, there's supposed to be a stop sign there, but there's not, so there it is. This guy came out here and basically dug himself a road. Put himself in a road. And I'm kind of hoping if this road has an outlet on the other side, that'd be really nice. But I kind of get the impression that it probably doesn't. So, anyway, alright. But, you know, and I understand that I won't be able to do this, you know, but my children may be able to pull this off, where I couldn't. I've come a distance from where my parents would even begin to be able to go. Just philosophically. I want my children to build off of where I I pushed off, you know. I'm not personally going to be able to get, probably, to where I want to be, you know. I think I'm a new kind of, not a new kind of person, but I'm a very different kind of person. Part of what Zenith is. It isn't just, well, you got disabilities. Oh, boy, isn't that fun. And he's trying to make them all look cute and nice. No, I mean, I'm a very different kind of person. And yeah. This society isn't made for a person like me, but we can build our own society someday. If there's enough of us. I had 6 kids. I can go on and have, you know, and I can go on and have more. And the world's an amazing place with amazing possibilities. The fact that our society and our culture actually try to put us into boxes that are more too convenient for certain groups, normally the rich and the powerful, people who want power and gain, say, no, no, you have to stay in this box because I can profit off of you if I can keep you working the way I want you to and behaving the way that I desire you to. That's kind of what I'm after, is that kind of an attitude. Oops, nope, here's the other gate. Yeah. Okay, it didn't work out. This place, it used to lead somewhere. But he's been putting up things to say no more. There's no more of that business. Alright, anyway, so I'll go back to the road I was on and we'll continue our journey. And there's a certain, you know, and that's why I come up with the whole idea of living under the radar. Doing things where the big and the powerful people go, it's just one guy. Ignore it. It's nothing important. As long as he's not out beating the drum and waving the flag and saying, you know, yada, 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 really loud, we can safely ignore him. He's not going to destroy our playhouse, you know, the way things are, that we like them to stay exactly the way they are. Conservatives, political conservatives, the word actually comes from conservation. You want things to stay the way they have always been. Business types are usually heavy conservatives for the very reason that they figured out how to make good money, get rich, off of the way things are. So they don't want things to change because that will affect their bottom line. Now, you can only do that up to a point. Things are going to change. But you can sure slow them down, and the primary instrument that you would use to do that is society, culture, and its most powerful servant, it's been found, government. You can force things to stay a certain way by writing a law that says, and these things shall be this way. And to a degree, they will. Now, things always change. New circumstances come up. New smart little boogers come up with new things that change the whole universe. Computers were an excellent example of that. Oh, sorry. You know, this guy, you know, this Bull Canyon Ranches guy, much larger ranch, he used to have a lot more of this stuff split out. It was, you know, he had subdivided, I'm sure, because the conventional wisdom that has worked for like maybe 30 or 40 years says that, hey, you'll be selling all these things off eventually. It'll be fantastic. You'll make a ton of money. And you won't be a rancher anymore. You'll be a speculator. Of course, all ranchers are speculators too. You know, that's why many ranchers get into banking. It's because they're speculative, you know. They take risks and they produce new cows. And the whole point is, you know, well, I'm speculating that I'm going to be able to sell my cows at a good profit. I'll do this, and this. I'll buy this, and this vehicle to make my operation more productive. But that's okay because I'll get the money back to take care of that in a little bit. But they go by normal rules. But when those rules stop working, when those rules change, or when just life changes on you, when computers come in and you go, well, I'm going to do it the same way my pappy and my grandpappy did it, which worked great for them, they got rich, you know. And you come back and you go, ooh, but I'm not getting rich that way, you know, and you have to make changes. It makes sense to just make a little pull. I've got land. I'll sell for a huge profit because land is a huge investment. Well, right now, land isn't a big investment. Lots of mortgages went south. Therefore, land is scary. People don't want to touch land. I personally have a problem with land from the whole standpoint of it's a constant expense. Now, it doesn't have to be. There's no requirement that it must be. Because land doesn't blow up. It doesn't waste away and die. It doesn't do any of that stuff. You know, land is the one thing that you can always rely upon. It's always going to be there. Now, it might not be as productive as you thought. But that doesn't say that there won't be no land. It doesn't shrink and disappear. It just may, it may be of a different kind that needs to be used in a different way. But I'm sure that this investment group bought up this huge ranch and said, well, we'll subdivide it, we'll sell it off, because that's the way we make money, because we know that's how real estate works. And when it came down to it, they said, oh, wait, you know, the economic outlook doesn't look good. People are not buying up large pieces of land because they see the wonderful, glorious, golden future that they saw 3 months ago. You know, that's gone now. We need to, you know, we need to take up other opportunities, other ideas, other things. Anyway, so, yeah, and that's what happens. That's, you know, liberals like the new idea, trying out new things, experimenting with different things, although they've become quite conservative in their views, too. They don't really try new things. They only try to institute what they've seen in other places, because they're situated so that they should get more power by doing this. You know, when people call people progressive in the United States, it's not progressive. It's doing what Europe did. Europe was progressive. But now that we see what they've gotten, you know, it's somewhat, well, I don't know if that's a good idea or not. You know, it didn't work out very well for them. And you would think that they would say, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to do something different or a different take on it. But they don't. They just say, no, we're going to do it, you know, because it really still ended up profiting certain people. Just didn't make the, you know, the original ideas of why that was done. I did not want to get into a political conversation here. Why am I getting into a political conversation again? I didn't want to. Because I don't find it interesting. No, I seem to obsess about it, but it's like, but this isn't about life. I'm tired of trying to explain why things are. I want to get away from things. I feel like that if I could get away from things a little bit, even a bit, I'd stop obsessing about it because it wouldn't touch me any. I wouldn't bother listening to the news because all the news is about the political conditions right at the moment. Who's getting one up on who? Who's getting sent to jail for this and that? Who's doing that? And it's like, you know what? I don't care about that stuff. You know, I say, well, you just don't care because you don't feel like it affects you. And so the way they drag you in is to affect you. You know, you need to be affected by this, and then you'll pay more attention. And once we have you, then we can scare you. You know, the Republicans can scare you this way. The Democrats can scare you that way. And you start to move more like a herd of people rather than like an independent person that has your own will. Have you noticed that? Experts, quote-unquote experts, can predict what you're going to do or what people in general are going to do. And they typically get it right. They typically do a pretty good job. And the funny part is it's that way because we all do the same things. We're trained to. We're supposed to get our information from the same sources. You know, this is what makes us, you know, and it's almost become the definition of what an American is. That's why I get my news from other sources, or try to. It's difficult. It isn't simple. And the funny part is it's becoming a worldwide issue. It isn't just, you know, well, you know, I've got this. But I've got this, you know. It is, we're all in this together, and you go, you know what, maybe we all don't want to go there. Maybe I just don't want it anymore. How about those apples? Anyway, so, I'd love a little bit of distance, a little bit of freedom to do something different. My primary reason that pulls me back from it is that although I can make that decision, I can't make that decision for my wife, who really doesn't seem to want to do that. She's very, I don't think she's happy, but she feels some comfort from doing that. You know, there is a lot of comfort from being a part of the crowd. And I think, you know, and that's true. Even though I talk about separating and being a little bit different, you know, it doesn't, you know, how have you seen me do it yet? No. You know, and it's convenient for me to make up the excuse that it's Lisa's fault that I don't do these things. To a degree it is, but, you know, it's also convenient for me to say that and go along doing what most other people do. You know, but I also have to think about my kids. They have to live in this world, and they need to be able to make that choice, too. But, honestly, I need to think about it this way. Honestly, when it comes down to it, you know, you always have to remember, it's really easy to fall into what society wants you to do. You know, you don't really need any training, and it's kind of funny because that's mostly what school is training toward being the kind of person that society wants you to be. Doing things society wants you to do, having the attitude that society wants you to have, you know, that a very large part of it has to do just with that. And it's not necessary. I think it's just used as an insurance policy for people who might wander off and find other interesting things to do. This is an insurance policy to make sure that nobody wanders off. It's kind of a holdover from an older time when people were more independent, more rough and tumble, more willing to be independent thinking back in a previous century. And, you know, schools have done an excellent job to make sure that fewer and fewer people do that. And that's its primary function. You know, it says, oh, but they teach me this, they teach me that, and they go, they teach you what they think that you need to know, mostly so that you can enter employment of your betters. It's not for independence sake, trust me. How many entrepreneur classes are there that are successful and do well? Zippo. Well, not zippo. Very few. Very, very few. Why? Because it's not part of the program. You might have it for a few people. And, you know, it isn't a bad thing as long as you're not competing too much with the powers that be. But, see, it's gotten back into politics. But see, it runs through everything. You have to know that politics becomes important because politics becomes so powerful. In the past, it wasn't very powerful at all. Especially when people didn't have to pay attention to what you were doing. The most important function of government is to make sure that your attention is focused on what people want your attention to be focused on. What your leaders want your attention to be focused on. You know? The King of America, and I'll call him that because that's what our president has become. I don't care how they become that, you know. A king has lots of sway over how things go. Our president has lots of sway over how things go. Same basic thing. Might as well call him by the same title so people know what he does. Just calling him a president doesn't take away from the fact that he's a pretty powerful figure. Politics becomes, who do we want to be the next king? You know, and we get, and every time it happens, we get more and more exercised about it. I think in the past, it was kind of a, well, I don't really care. Doesn't matter. Because the king, because that president couldn't really affect you very much. But slowly, 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 he gained more and more power. Government became more powerful. And the president became more powerful because government had to do his bidding more and more. So now you have basically a king. You know, the fact that he's only king for 4 years or 8 years doesn't take away from the power that he wields, even if it's a short-term power. There's a huge amount of power there. Why do we give it to them? Why do they have it? Well, they wanted it. You know, I want that. And you're going to give it to me. Or I'm just going to take it. That's what's happening now. We've found out that a president doesn't really have to appeal to Congress to give him power. At least not, you know, less and less. He can write executive orders that have almost the same standing as law because the executive branch is far larger than the legislative one. And it touches people's lives more actively. Your legislator, you'll never see him, you'll never shake his hand, you'll never meet one of his aides particularly, very small group. Says, but the executive branch, you're going to get hit up with all the time. Your police force is part of the executive branch. Your everything else, you know, is, you know, when you have to go bug the government for money, you go to the executive branch or a subcontractor of them. You know, now in other countries, they fix that problem. There is no separate branches. Like in Britain, there is no executive versus the legislature, you know. The Prime Minister is a member of the House of Commons. You know? Very important member. You know, I think they have a speaker in the House of Commons, but that's just somebody that handles the parliamentary procedure of what happens there. They don't have an executive. The executive is drawn from the legislative. Funny. You know, I don't know all the ramifications of that particularly, but I find it interesting. They have a combined one. Ours is separate, and I think there would be a certain movement here if it wasn't codified in the Constitution. If we felt like we could walk away from the Constitution, and many people think we can, and are trying incrementally to do so, absolutely, make it very... Is this water finally cleared up? Look, the water finally cleared up. It took days and days and days. It's because people keep piling dirt on the side of it so it forms a lake. Anyway, so that's what ultimately kind of comes down to it. And breaking away from that gets difficult because these executive branch people, they're very invested in your life. The executive branch can come and take your child away from you. For a variety of reasons. Sometimes just because of a certain combination of social workers and judges. We've got a judge that just is very excited about taking kids away from parents for almost any reason. Okay, well then, that's great. We need a social worker in there who's really active and going out there, and when they get a call that something bad may be happening, boy, they're on the job. And they're out there, and their first impression is just to pull a kid. You know, we don't like how it's going, it doesn't look optimal here. Rah! And you know, and that's great because, at least that's great for government because it creates fear. And it creates the fact that when government says, and you're going to do this, we suggest you do this, it almost comes as a command. They don't have to command you anymore. When their nose twitches and... they go to scratch it, the executive branch people. Everybody kind of flinches and goes, what does that mean? What does that mean? You know, when you say, oh, a president has kind of a socialistic bent, everybody flinches and goes, oh my gosh, what does that mean? Because they know that president can make a lot of changes really fast. Look at our president. He changed up the entire executive branch. He all of a sudden made a Department of Homeland Security. It went from nothing to being huge, monstrous. Most of government is out of the Department of Homeland Security. Most of the grants that are given to organizations that are the government minions that do their work without having the government badge on. Makes everybody feel a little better, I guess, which really isn't, shouldn't make them feel any better at all. You know, is being done by the Homeland Security Department, which sucked in so many things that the other departments are minuscule compared to it. And that just happened in the last, 8 years? You know, we're going to change the way government works. And go, boy, did they. Boy, did they. Is the next president going to change the whole thing again and decide that Homeland Security needs to be broken apart and rearranged? Of course, people complain about the cost, and that's an interesting way to look at it as to not doing it. I say don't do it because you don't want government getting weird about that stuff. Now there's whole sections of government that are just weird about making sure the homeland is secure, which means, you know, internal stormtrooper type things. You know, people need to behave this way and this way and this way because it'll make the homeland safer. You know, we're going to inspect more crops. We're going to exercise more control over farmers because that will make the homeland safer. And it's like, oh, great, whole new way to instigate a whole new bunch of, to throw out a whole bunch of freedoms that the founding fathers didn't even consider we would be willing to give up, you know, things like, well, you know, I didn't think we had to write a law that said that each person should be guaranteed a certain amount of oxygen. We didn't ever think along those lines. But you know you better, because who knows, there might start to be a quota soon. You know, every person needs to have so much oxygen, so we need to pare down the number of people, which is the easiest way to control the oxygen problem. I could create a whole new crisis here by talking about the fact that there's, you know, the whole problem is too much CO2, too much greenhouse gases. Could be caused by the fact that too many people, too many animals and stuff like that are expelling CO2, which is what we do. That we need to boost the proportion of oxygen to carbon dioxide. We need more trees and we need less people. You know, start putting down people that we don't feel like are contributing enough to the place. You know, it always starts with the old people. We'll have all the old people euthanized at 70 because, you know, people who live past 70 have a high proportion of pain and torture and frankly are kind of a drag on the younger people. So we can start euthanizing them. We'll make it into a beautiful ceremony of how wonderful their life has been. And then you go, okay, now why don't we start snuffing out at least half of the babies? And we can say that it's because they're sickly or bad, but why don't we just snuff out half of them just by fiat? Just because we need less people taking in oxygen and breathing out that nasty carbon dioxide. Yeah, yeah. You can see how this can become kind of a crusade or a campaign. And people are so acculturated to anything that, you know, to not thinking deeply about anything. Don't think deeply about it. That's a bad idea. What little deep thinking a lot of people do now is only because, oh my gosh, there's all kinds of partridges, quail, little guys. Come on, guys, run, run. There you go. They're doing better. Okay. Is all about, you know, getting one up on your political opponents. That's really the only critical thought, and there's not much of that because they don't want anybody getting really smart, because then their arguments won't make any sense. Because people will start analyzing what they're saying. So yeah, it's kind of built in that that things are designed to kind of keep us kind of stupid, off-center, not being able to think in any kind of depth, for the simple reason that politics is the most important thing. That's important because when politics is the most important thing, government becomes the most important thing. And when government's the most important thing, everything slows down a bit. We can try to control people a little bit better. And they're much easier to predict as a group. We don't coalesce into herds by nature, I think. I don't think humans are by nature a herding group of people, but it's heavily encouraged. From minute one, that's school's biggest need, is to make sure that you're part of a larger group, and that larger group is so important. Rah, 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 we love the football team. It isn't because we love football, but because we all need to feel like we're on the same side. That we're all the same. You know, it's a small world after all. I was talking about that too. Hey, man. It's because that's important for a lot of people. You know, Walt Disney didn't want just the little white kids to come to Disneyland. He wanted all the little kids to come to Disneyland. And what a wonderful thought to just kind of put your hands together and clench them hard and smile and say, we're all the same. We all love riding. We all love riding the roller coaster at Space Mountain. I haven't been to Disneyland in years. We went there, I think the last time I touched the Disneyland was on my honeymoon, 20 years ago. There it is. Yee-hee! 20 years ago. Anyway, so, it's a small world after all. They want it small. I don't think anybody else, I don't think people naturally want it small. They want some space. They want some freedom to do what they'd like to do. God gave you intellect not to follow the other person in front of you's butt like a cow. If that was true, he would have made us all cows, I suppose. Well, that's not the way it works, but you know, apply whatever logic you like to it. If you're behaving like animals, why bother being a human? Why bother coming up with that whole thing? But they're trying to take us away from that for several reasons. You know, each individual person may have their own reason why they appease society. I do it. Everybody at some point, I think, almost feels the absolute obligation to have to appease society just for the simple reason that if you don't, it's become so powerful through the government that they can punish you if you don't. Like the whole thing, you can buy a piece of land, you can pay it off. 200 years ago, it was paid off. It was yours. Now it's not. Government can take that land. You know, they can raise, you know, you have to make money in order to hang on to that land because there's a tax on it. And that's how they suck you in. That's how they originally started sucking people in. You have to do what we want to because we control the money. And if we tax most activities, then we can force people to live the way we want them to live. You know, why on earth are you building a Cape Cod house in New Mexico? It makes no sense. Well, that's really easy. Through laws, we almost force you to. When you choose not to, we have interesting ways of punishing you. You know, and they do it in such a way, so we're not taking away your freedom to do it. We're just steering you really heavily. We will exact a heavy cost in doing things your way. Like, I'm very sure if I decide to go with my tent idea, which I will not because my wife refuses to do it until she actually has it there and can check it off. Of course, she always has complete veto power, which she uses all the time, you know. And that's her prerogative. I'm married to Lisa, which means Lisa's happiness is very important to me. Lisa's happiness is to have everything that the world considers to be, and I'm not saying that's a total absolute, because it's not. You know, my opinions, my ideas affect Lisa quite a bit. But not as much as I wish they did, but that's neither here nor there. She's her own person. She isn't, as they say, a cow. Although she comes from a cattle heritage. So it's hard. It's hard for her. She wants to follow the group. And, you know, there's a certain amount of punishment in not following the group. You know, we homeschool. There's a certain amount of punishment from homeschooling. They don't tell you you can't. They just make your life more difficult if you choose to. Well, we'll still tax you just as much. You don't get that money back. You know, and people always talk about, well, you should be able to get that money back. You go, oh, no, no. You know, and they have 500 really pretty decent reasons why that they can't do that. So, you know, and homeschoolers are smart not to push the issue too hard because they could just make homeschooling illegal, either again or worse or whatever. So you don't want to get. I'm more of a lay low, be grateful, don't draw attention to yourself, because the minute you do, they'll find a way to tear your to take away that freedom too. You mean people aren't taking their children to school? Oh my gosh, we can't tolerate that. They're not getting educated properly. Okay, that one didn't wash. And they did try it. Nobody's saying they didn't give a good effort to saying that that wasn't true. Then they started testing them. And in my state, they stopped testing them because it was embarrassing, I think. The homeschoolers were doing a whole lot better than the school people were. You don't turn people into cows that make good test scores. It just doesn't go. It doesn't go together. I don't care how much you work those cows as hard as you can. The more you make the person a cow, the worse they're going to do on tests. It doesn't matter how you change that test. Cows do not excel. Cows sit and chew grass. And they're easily manipulated. You can't have both, which is really what government wants. They want highly skilled, highly trained cows. And that doesn't exist. They're trying to find a good thing. You know, our test scores are going down. Oh my gosh, we aren't the smartest people on the face of the earth. That's just intolerable. And you go, of course not. You're creating cows. You're creating cows. How can you possibly, you know, you aren't going to have a smart cow? Because you don't like smart cows. Smart cows break down your fences. Smart cows get past your gates. They figure out how to open your gates. You don't want a smart cow. You want people to stay where they're put. And that means you can't let them be very smart. We're doing our best. Society and culture and government together in lockstep, helping each other get towards some unspeakable goal that certainly isn't in my favor, probably isn't in yours too. You know, they can't keep up the pretense anymore. They can't do it. Even though they try. Oh, well, we'll just make the teachers' lives more miserable. Of course, the teachers fight back because they're tired of being the agent of change for every crazy whim that comes up. I guess. I don't know how teachers feel. I taught school for 1 year, and I'm not interested in doing it again. Really am not. I found out that it's diametrically opposed to what I want. I am not interested in creating cattle. And that's what I had. I had cattle. People took my class not because they were interested in what was going on. They took my class because it was less worse than other things. And when I was trying to impart what I thought was important, they could care less. They could care less. And it was like, who cares? And it was also the point where I couldn't care anymore. Because I was just running up against that apathy. I couldn't break free of that. You know, don't need any more cows that are just going along the way that they're told to go along because it makes their betters, it makes life easier for their betters. Really, it is a fact of convenience. You want people to be a part of a mass because you can get a mass to move the way you want them to. You know, like people saying herding cats. I'm a cat. I'm a cat person. Sort of. You know, not that I like to keep cats, but I'm a person that doesn't do what he's supposed to do. You know, doesn't do what other people want me to do. That's what dogs do. Dogs are all about doing whatever. This is so wonderful. Oh yeah, I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, like cows. Cats aren't like that. It's just like somebody's talking about. You can't get a wolf to do anything. You have to get a dog. You can train a dog to behave a certain way. You can train, you know, that's why dogs make such excellent things to use in movies. That's why you have more dog movies than you have cat movies. It's hard to train a cat. Yeah, only certain cats are trainable. And that's not a good, at least from the cat's perspective, I'd have to think that that's not a good thing to be, is trainable. Because you lose your will. You do what you're told to do. Dogs are much easier. That's why you get off dog movies. Oh, dogs are so wonderful because you can get them to do anything. Seth, come forward. You know, do you feel like a dog? Do you feel like a cow? You should. Because that's basically what they're trying to get you to be. To be part of a mass that you can affect. You know, if I throw money at them, they'll behave this way. You can see it in the way politics runs. We can get people to consume more if we just get the pump primed. That was what the money was. The well will run dry. Here's an analogy. Wells run dry in hard times. But you can sometimes get them back into production by priming them. In the case of people, throwing money at them. Now, water is a known factor. Water always behaves exactly the way other water behaves. All water is the same. The point of society, culture, and government, what they're trying to accomplish is to make all humans the same. They want to know, well, when we do this, people will behave like this. Government and society get mad when they see people not behaving the way they're supposed to. Which means, like water, you know, they threw money at people that was supposed to get the consumption back up, prime the pump, and then they can just keep doing the handle and the water will do exactly what the water always did. You're not the pump. That's your leaders. You're the water. Have you realized that yet? That's what you are? You don't have water going out and spraying up instead of down because water has no mind, has no will. The government, society, culture, everything that wraps up into a nice cute little fuzzy ball wants you to behave the same way. They want you to have no will. They want you to be a known constant. Gravity, you know, gravity makes things fall. Water flows downhill. Hot air rises. People, when government throws money at them, need to feel all nice and snuggly and better and do, you know, and start consuming again as if nothing's gone wrong. I'm grateful to say that as a group, that there are still some cats among the cows. Things that won't do what they're told, that don't amend themselves to training. I'm all for having people that don't amend themselves to training. Because I've seen the training, and it's no good. It's not good. It's not right. It's not in anybody's interest except for the people who are on top. Well, I've almost reached my destination. Boy, I wasn't expecting this to be what I was going to be talking about. This often happens to me. I know I'm not going to come back. I'm not going to talk about peas or genetics or anything like that. Which is sad. I think it's an important thing. I don't know if it's important to know. It's interesting. I often question what's important. that I think that we should probably say that nothing's probably important. Or you shouldn't look at it that way. You should be much more interested in what you're interested in. And that when you have that thing, it's just as important as anything else is in its sphere. You know? And that's okay. You know, if people say, oh, but this is so important. Boy, you have to take 4 years of English. And you go, you know what? Most people don't even use any of that. Oh, but it's so important. And you go, it's so important that it's just as important as what your interest is. And it's like, no, it's not. Because trust me, if you're following your interest, you're probably, most likely, going to find ways to communicate that with other people because that's what interests do. That's what interests do. We're always going backwards. We're always saying, well, they need a certain skill set. And yeah, it isn't connected to anything. You know, it's not it's separated from an interest. It's just a discrete set of skills. And a big thing to know is that, hey, people will develop those kinds of skills in the act of pursuing their interests. You don't have to teach that stuff. It'll just come. You don't have to teach a kid who gets hooked on computer programming about math. The math will come. The math will come by its nature. You don't have to teach a kid that loves botany basic science. Because what he needs to know in pursuit of botany, what science he needs to know in the pursuit of botany will come. It will just be there, and he'll pick it up so fast. You don't have to drill it into them. You don't have to make it into, let's get out the whips and beat them. We do things backwards. Don't teach basic skills first. Get them into their interests first. Let them go off in that direction, and the basics just kind of fall into place. People lack so much faith in the fact that by nature, people can handle most things that come their way. You know. And let me say it to you this way. Let me give you a for instance that hopefully will make it very clear. Thieves. There's no school for thieves, although people like to kind of romanticize the fact that there must be some sort of place. There must be some school for thieves that they learn their trade so well, and they, you know, and there's really smart thieves that may not have ever gone to school, but they're excellent at what they do. And there's not a school. They found an interest, unfortunately, it was in thievery, and they pursued it. And there it is. What they wanted to do, what their interest was. I always thought, here's another example. How do powerful people learn how to be powerful? Because they certainly don't teach that in school, do they? If they did, more people would be powerful, wouldn't you think? Of course, that, of course, leans the whole thing of what school purports to do and what school actually ends up doing are two different things, too. You have to understand that once you start seeing the fact that, you know, but you might say, but powerful people from my town, for instance, they didn't go to private schools particularly. They went to the public schools with everybody else, most likely. How did they get this ability? And they go, well, do you think they were trained? Maybe, but it wasn't through school. They didn't go to a different school. I saw them. It's because they had interest in being powerful. And they pursued it. Of course, it also helps to have parents who have already done it. They can help you immensely. That's why, you know, power can be clustered into families. You know, well, that's a powerful family. They'll always be powerful. It isn't just the money that they have. It's also the attitude that they're kind of inculcated with as children. You know, and you tend to learn these things brushing up against these people. Of course, at school, you'll never learn this crap. In fact, you know, you might learn it in sports, but not really. You know, it's not there either. If that was true, every single sport person that plays in sports should be a great, marvelous leader, and they're not. So you say, well, it's not sports. You know, if you're to take school's rationale that there's a certain body of knowledge, and once you have it, it opens up doors for you. It opens up possibilities. And you go, well, it depends on what possibilities you're after. You know, society seems to be built the way it's built. But I think it's built kind of artificially. It isn't really the way nature would be, for instance. Anyway, so, you know, where do people come up with this stuff? You go, it's not taught in school, and they don't go to a special school to learn it, because they don't. Says it must come through another avenue that isn't available to everybody. Wow. You know. And those who control these things, you know, powerful people control schools, too. There's a lot of money to be made in schools, contract letting, stuff like that. That's what's happening there. So anyway, okay, I think I've said enough about several subjects. I kind of wandered around. Hopefully you found something in there that was worthwhile to you. This is Jay Nebro. You're listening to episode number 719. This is Life Autistic. I'm Jay Nemro. The contact number is Jay Nemro. No, it's not. It's autism, AUTISM, @quix.us. Have a great day.